Welcome to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I am your host, Lockie Phillips, and I help deeply caring equestrians create emotionally balanced horses with science, empathy, and feel. This podcast is a safe place for anyone who desires a better future for horses and for the equestrian lifestyle. I hope that you will enjoy these solo and collaborative episodes where we enjoy a deep insight into our horses' worlds and ways in which we can make that better for them. If you love horses and are willing to do right by them, you're going to love this podcast. And I thank you for being here. Welcome to a solo episode. We can expect with this podcast going forwards that I'm going to dip in and dip out with solo episodes on an occasional basis. I think it's important that I'm creating spaces for a singular voice to be heard, but also collaborative voices to be heard and community voices to be heard as well. I'm a person of a minority, right? As a queer person, we often don't have voices in certain spaces. As any person who is a minority knows that it's hard to find voices in certain spaces. I'm also going to check my privilege at the door. So there are certain privileges about being who I am, but there's also certain aspects which are not a privilege. And I know that it's important for me and an act of self-awareness and an act of kindness to continue to carve out space for myself to exist on my own as well. So as we're going forwards, so I'm going to begin these solo episodes with an idea, and I'm going to help you understand this idea as I flesh it out for you, a little bit like my social media posts, but now in spoken word format. I'm less comfortable with a spoken word format than I am with the written word, or even with the moving demonstration, right? That's my background, not just as a dancer, but as a horse professional. I can demonstrate something, but it's a practice for me to speak about it, especially when I have to just speak to a machine on my own in a room somewhere. So here goes. A few days ago, I had a message from a friend of mine. She's not only a friend, but she's a client, and she's been a client for a while. She is living in Canada with her daughter, and I'll name her because she's given me permission. Her name's Stephanie. And Stephanie and her daughter, Elsie, first came to see me in September 2022. They drove many, many hours, I believe 9 or more hours, down from their region of Canada into New Hampshire to attend a clinic I was running at a client's house in New Hampshire. And we met each other then, and then from there, her daughter Elsie started working with me in online coaching modalities and lessons. They, both of them, have studied my online courses, and then they invited me to do a clinic in their region, and that clinic was kind of magical because all of the clients were existing clients of mine, and there was something for me hugely satisfying about delivering a clinic with them. So I've been in Stephanie's home. I've sat at her table and had her salmon, and we know each other personally and professionally. Stephanie wrote to me a few days ago, out of the blue, with this message that she had actually prepared to send to a friend of hers. A friend of hers had gotten in contact and said, "Look, we're thinking to host Lockie in our region of Canada. We know that you hosted Lockie. What was it like for you?" I'm going to read it to you verbatim, and then I'm going to explain to you why I'm reading this to you verbatim. So I had this message. It said, "If you are able to go to one of his clinics, go for it. Lockie is very different, but he is really incredible. His emotional horsemanship methods are super interesting and work really nicely with BTMM, that is balance through movement method, or the Celeste Lazarus method. I first met him at a clinic in New Hampshire in 2022. My daughter Elsie discovered him through her whole horse apprenticeship course with Alexa Linton. Lockie was one of the guest lecturers. Elsie then took a couple of Lockie's online courses and did some coaching calls and distance lessons with him. When she found out that he was going to be within a day's drive of us, she convinced me to drive her and her horse down to participate. After that, she wanted to host him for a clinic here, which we did last April 2023. That clinic was the best clinic I have ever been a part of, both on a participant level as well as on an organizational level. Working with him in terms of clinic organization is a dream. The clinic is totally turnkey. He does all the ticket sales and paperwork and fee collection. It was a really great experience. The participant spots are limited, but the audit spots I think are only limited by the size of the venue. The clinic is a group style. All horses and humans come into the arena together. Lockie insists on having hay and water stations for the horses in case they need to take a break during the session. He introduces his basic techniques concepts, and then he has the pairs try and practice them. It always starts with the basic groundwork and handling techniques and mother foal bonding, which is his signature technique to create a sense of care and nurturance between the horse and human. It is quiet, soft, subtle work, and it really does work. There is nothing flashy or exciting, but it is deep and emotional. At our clinic, all the pairs had emotional breakthroughs, and many in the auditing audience did as well. Lots of tears and releases and feelings of being seen and heard for the first time for many in their horse journey. There is a long lunch break, and then in the afternoon, there is ridden work, if appropriate, for each pair. I did not ride the horse I brought to the clinic, but my afternoon session was focused on preparing for ridden work. All the sessions are group sessions. The horses and humans support each other, and it's pretty special to see how that unfolds. At the end of the day, after the horses are put away, there is a group question and answer session that is super interesting too. It is unlike any clinic I have experienced, and it was truly life-changing for me, not only with regard to how I now interact with my horses, but also in how I approach things in my day-to-day life. I have since participated in Lockie's homecoming program, and that is a really good one. He has it available for self-study now and will do another live cohort in the fall. Lockie is not for everyone, that is for sure. He has very distinct boundaries and he will state them. It is not personal, but sometimes people are not so good with direct communication. I prefer that. What you see is what you get. We would host him again in a heartbeat, but I'm in the midst of moving farms and some big life changes. If I am planning to attend the clinic in Almonte, so if you are able to get there, I'll be so happy to meet you in person. So these are the words of somebody else. These are not my words. I did not prompt her to say these things, and I did not ask her to leave me this review. She spontaneously offered this to a friend and then copy-pasted and sent it to me. And she wanted to send it to me. I don't know why. Maybe she was feeling it, but sometimes this job can be a lonely job. And it was really heartening for me to hear this feedback from someone that I know I can really trust and value the feedback. And the part of this message that made me feel, let's say a little raw, was when she mentioned that Lockie is not for everyone, that I have distinct boundaries and I will state them. This is a pain point for me because I wish I could be this dreamy horse boy that offends nobody. I wish I could be boundaryless and be someone for everyone. Sometimes I fantasize that my life would be easier if that was the case, but I know that that's just a fantasy. I know that that's not the case. And I know people who present themselves as dreamy horse boys or dreamy horse girls that don't offend, and they live in a mind prison where they are afraid to say the truth. And they are very, very limited in their scope for intellectual and emotional exploration around topics surrounding horses, because they know that there's only a very, very small window of opportunity to explore without triggering people, inciting people, intentionally or unintentionally, and that they have to hold boundaries because they're unable to go out there and be proactive with them. They have to stop themselves from being themselves rather than allowing themselves to be themselves and creating boundaries for that to happen. So my body won't let me. My body won't let me deny itself its expression. It's like, instead of an explosion, I implode, and that's not healthy for me. And I'm very clear that my business is my home. My work is my home. The way I serve others, I'm at home when I do that. There's also a distinct differentiation between service providers who are defensive and service providers who are non-defensive. And I think it's really important that I am safe enough in my business to be myself. So if I am myself in my business and that offends somebody, then I am not safe in my business if that person remains with me. And therefore, there is an editing process. There is an editing process to every single business. We don't walk into a McDonald's and ask for a filet mignon, and we don't walk into a French restaurant and ask for a Big Mac. That we are allowed to craft spaces that are not for everyone. And the paradox of safe spaces is that a safe space is only a safe space if it's not safe for everybody. My group coaching program would not have been the safe place it was if I allowed brutal, entitled, or unkind people into that program. It would not be a safe space. We would not have had the opportunity to explore deeper felt senses and deeper questions and more raw edges of our horsemanship if there were people in the group that consistently made it a violent place to be. And so it is my duty and responsibility to create filters. And some people will be filtered out by that. And I know a lot of people, even friends, who have felt filtered out by what I put across into the world. And well, if that happens, it happens. I'm always looking into my own wounds and trying to lean into those and clean those up and soften the edges. I'm always looking at ways that I can become more approachable, because it is the shock and surprise of my life that what I'm doing with emotional horsemanship has appealed to such a broad spectrum of equestrian disciplines, backgrounds, and cultures. It's been the shock of my life, and it's something I haven't been prepared for. But at the same time, there are limits to this. And at the same time, I'm allowed to have standards of behavior for even my own clients. And thankfully, I'm at the end of a process, a social restructuring process within my business, where I've created filters and spaces for wonderful people to join me in learning. And I'm blessed to say that it has worked, and I'm booked, and I love every single person that I'm working with at this time. I'm sharing this mostly because I'm trying to reach other equestrian professionals out there who don't feel safe in their businesses. I think it's pretty normal in the equestrian service sector for trainers, service providers to, if not resent their clients, but feel frightened of them at some level. And this fear of them, or treating their own clients as liabilities, creates a weird neurotic dynamic between service provider and client that I just abhor. I can't function with it. Let's think of a farrier who trims or shoes for a client that in their personal life they have deep misgivings about this person's level of responsibility towards their horses. They know that those horses aren't getting the care or the turnout or the exercise that they need, that the hooves aren't getting cleaned in between appointments and they leave the trim cycles too long. You know, that service provider is showing up compromised. Are they safe, to be honest, with that person? You know, if you go into Facebook and you look into farrier groups, there are some groups that have created hidden Facebook communities of just service providers, where they've created hidden blacklists of unsafe clients that no professional should access. I think it's really, really important if we are to move the standards higher for horses, that we move the standards higher for ourselves as well. And I think we need to start with changing the dynamic between service providers and clients. Clients and service providers need a way more flat dynamic where there is an equal 50-50. Clients need to feel safe to speak up with their vets and their service providers, advocate for their horses, and that the service providers can take a breath, pump the brakes and listen, and treat their clients as equals. And if their clients demonstrate a lack of knowledge in an area, well, maybe they can find ways to help them build knowledge rather than just continue to serve them and leave them alone in their ignorances. I think it's really important that we do that. And then flip that script. I think it's really important that clients treat their service providers with respect, with humility, and like a human being. So allow them to make mistakes and never, ever, ever run them around about money, about payments, about the quality of their work. Create spaces for them to do their best work and then pay them appropriately. I mean, the more I look into it, the more I realize that the horse training problems that people like myself are here to fix are caused not because the trainers had a lack of skill or because the trainers necessarily wanted to have a crappy attitude towards training. It's because they're stuck in this late-stage capitalist hellscape where it is not possible to train horses appropriately because it's not profitable to train a horse properly. Let's say you take a young horse who's born. To train that horse appropriately would mean starting them much, much later than is industry standard. But then you've got 5 or 6 years where that horse is on a feed bill and that horse needs to be paid for. If you were to train a horse from scratch and then rehome it, sell it to the public, and to make a profit on that and to do that properly by not starting them too young, by never rushing them, by taking the time that that horse requires, to do that properly, that horse isn't going to see the opportunity to be making a profit for that trainer for 6 or 7 years. How many of us have the luxury to invest 6 or 7 years, tens of thousands of hours into a project, and then when you come to sell it, every single client you come to complains about the price? How much would that cost? $50,000? $100,000? Just to produce a basic horse that can walk, trot, canter, turn left and right and stop? And to do that appropriately without exposing their skeleton to inappropriate activities? It's not profitable because the business structures that we are currently working with don't sufficiently create an environment where training horses well also pays the bills of the trainer, and trainers deserve to have their bills paid. Unless you are a registered charity and a 501c3, trainers deserve to make a living. I think a lot of service providers get in trouble when their business masquerades as a charity without the benefits, the government benefits that charities can afford them. That they embark on a social enterprise and forget that they have bills to pay. And often they then align with a client base that expects them to have a struggling artist storyline underneath them. And as soon as that service provider steps up and says, actually, I deserve to live better than basic survival, I deserve to not be in a chronic state of emergency, I deserve to have a fully regulated nervous system when I show up to serve you because I can serve you better that way. Often when you start to do that, you lose those clients because they say, oh, you think you're better than us. Ask me how I know this, guys. Ask me how I know this. I try not to make the same mistakes more than 7 times. So if we are to train horses better, if we are to abandon methodologies, practices, and principles which are plainly abusive, it behooves us, pun intended, to start at the root. And the root is the business structure, from your costings to where you're economizing to how you make benefits to how you make the animals work in this late stage capitalist hellscape without making that work inappropriate. How do we do this? These are tricky, tricky waters to navigate. I have a few ideas. One of my ideas is that we need to move away completely from paradigms of extraction. And one of the paradigms of extraction is the tendency to create performance animals, because that animal at some level has a projection placed upon them from human culture that expects them to perform sooner rather than later, usually. This puts a horse between a rock and a hard place. It places the horse between their needs and the human's needs. It places the horse between what they're ready for and what the human requires them to do right now. This is a really tricky water to navigate, but what if we moved away from extraction as a paradigm? What can I get from you? What are the takeaways that I can get from you? What if we moved away from that and we moved into education? I really believe that the future is about education. What if, when a horse is born, there are ways that that horse is immediately participating fairly and appropriately as an instrument of education from the first day of its life? What if that horse, to use gross marketing speak about it, and I have a huge ick factor to even say the following sentence, what if that horse was, quote, monetized? Ick. I feel ick saying that, but it's true. What if that horse was monetized from the first day of its life in an education perspective? What if we were learning about their developmental milestones from day one? What if that horse had their end cost to purchase as a trained animal augmented and offset because that trainer and professional is earning and covering costs and building for their future with that horse together appropriately from day one, so that by the end, the horse doesn't cost $200,000 because that's what it costs to put that horse there in an appropriate manner. The horse now costs under $10,000 because that trainer has already felt the benefits from that animal from the beginning. I think this is the way to do it. If we do it this way, we're going to need to produce less horses. But I think there are too many horses and not enough homes. So I think breeders need to pump the brakes. I think we need to slow it down and we need to think of quality rather than quantity. If we're producing quantity of horses because it's a crapshoot which horses are going to succeed and which horses are going to have catastrophic failure, we're already in too deep. We're up the shit creek and we need to paddle our way back. I think we need a wholesale rethink on the way we breed and produce horses, because too many of my clients are picking up the pieces of an industry which chews up horses and then spits them out. And I would love to see in the future a reality where sensitive, skilled, caring horse owners who have capacity and space for ownership and stewardship of horses aren't held back in their skill acquisition journey by constantly rehabilitating and picking up the pieces because nobody else is. I have several clients whom are held back in their skill acquisition journey and held back in the development of their talents because they're picking up the pieces with horses who've been completely destroyed. And if they were to get a fresh, well cared for, well trained, appropriately and progressively developed animal who was just ready to go on with, if they had access to such an animal, I can only imagine how they would fly and how they would soar. And I think it's a pity that the people who are sensitive enough and have the capacity to go slowly with a horse are often the last people to get access to such horses. So, more questions than answers here, but it's something that I'm thinking about and wondering how I can walk my talk in the future, perhaps doing exactly this, having a very, very small scale breeding operation. I'm talking maybe two horses available every 3 years. That's the level I'm talking about. Two horses every 3 years. And I'm talking, this is a 10-year plan because those horses will not be available for rehoming until they're six. Not at all. if they want them under saddle, they won't be available until they're six and a half, maybe even seven, so that their skeleton is fully developed. They've had all of the appropriate developmental milestones ticked in a herd environment. Their health mentally, physically, and emotionally is fully consolidated, and now they're ready to go out in the world and be a member of a family to somebody else. I'm wondering if that is something I might be able to achieve. So I'm setting my sights on that and wondering if there's ways that horses can help us as professionals from the beginning and not consistently put us as professionals in these dead end scenarios where nobody's winning. Nobody's winning. Nobody's winning. So I guess those are my thoughts for today. These solo episodes, we can expect them to be shorter than the other episodes. So I'm going to balance these short solo episodes with allowing generally much longer collaborative episodes. Thank you for joining me here today. If you have thoughts or feelings about anything that I've brought up today, you can go to my free Facebook group. It's called the Emotional Horsemanship Discussion Group, where you can just post there, and there's a whole range of people, over 4,000 people there, where you can share your thoughts and your feelings. If you wanted to access me directly, you can join the private services waitlist and the waitlist for Homecoming 2.0, which is a group coaching program coming in September 2024. You can go to my website and you can join those waitlists and be the first to hear of when I'm opening again for new intakes and new clients. I'm so looking forward to meeting you and forming relationships with you and your horses. And I wanted to let you know that if you're out there in the world today and you're struggling at your barn, they see you as the weirdo, they see you as strange, that's their problem. When someone calls you weird or thinks or feels that you're weird, that says everything about their lack of flexibility and it says nothing about you. So stay true to yourself, stay calm, and keep being kind to your horses because the world really, really needs you. Thank you for being here, and I wish you a lovely rest of your day.